Well, Tony Bruschi has been our inside man on this case from day one. He is the Arkansas-based host of Hidden Killers podcast, and we will add a terrific reporter. Welcome back to the show, Tony.
Thank you. Glad to be here, Laura.
All right. So you've learned more information about the murders, including McGann's appearance as he came out of the woods. Tell us what you found out.
Well, today in the appearance in court, the judge formally read the charges, two counts of capital murder against McGann. He was appointed that public defender from the Arkansas Public Defender Commission to represent him. And it's not just your average public defender. They needed a death qualified attorney who could be assigned to this due to the capital murder charges, similar to what we saw in the Brian Koberger case in Idaho. No individual names have been named yet as far as who the attorney actually is. He was ordered held without bond, meaning he will remain in custody in the Washington County Detention Center, actually the same place that Josh Duggar, as you remember from that whole scandal, was also being held for a time. The prosecutor requested and the judge granted an order prohibiting McGann from contacting the victim's family. No plea was entered today, but the arraignment now dates set for August 25th of 25 at the Washington County Circuit Court. We will find out exactly what he's going to plea at that point in time. The 25th is the date that is set right now on the calendar, but that could possibly be moved up with scheduling adjustments.
All right. Well, you know, there's been a lot of questions about McGann's background as a teacher. Man, we've been reading a lot about this, and we are hearing numerous accounts now about how he acted around children. So what are you learning?
Well, here's the disturbing reality of how James Andrew, or Andrew McGann, rather, ended up teaching in Arkansas. I mean, despite multiple allegations of predatory and inappropriate behavior towards students in districts in Texas, and we are now starting to hear some unconfirmed allegations coming out of Oklahoma, McGann was never formally charged or even reported to authorities. Instead, he was quietly allowed to resign each time, leaving behind internal complaints locked away in confidential personnel files. Why is this? Because districts fear lawsuits, bad PR, and lengthy investigations, often leading them to handle these issues privately rather than involving law enforcement or child protective services. And compounding all this, there's no national database or requirement for schools to share disciplinary records when a teacher moves from state to state. So it's a systematic problem that really allowed this guy to fester as long as he did. Personal privacy laws and non-disclosure agreements further shield allegations from view. It's a glaring gap in mandatory reporting and inter-district communication that allowed McGann to bounce freely from one unsuspecting community to another until he allegedly ended up here in Northwest Arkansas committing these murders at Devil's Den State Park.
And you know what, Tony, you know what really strikes me, too, is that the two little girls that were on the trail with their parents were ages 7 and 9. And those are the ages of the kids that he was teaching in some of these other states. And we've heard stories about inviting 9-year-old girls into the classroom to have lunch with him and giving them treats and candy and Sonic drinks and stuff like that. So I think that that's just really odd that he chose a family, a mom and a dad with two girls about the age of the kids that he was teaching. But we'll find out more about that later as we move through the story. At this point, what are locals saying that this alleged killer has been caught? What's the mood like? Are people relieved? Are they mad? Because he was about to start teaching school, right?
There's a sense of relief and a sense of anger at some point. The community is happy that he has certainly been found, and a big pat on the back to the authorities and the investigators that spent countless hours and 24 hours, 48 hours working this job and eventually bringing this alleged killer to justice. But the issue with it is this seemed to be a random attack. It wasn't an issue of domestic violence. This was purely random, and it's certainly going to be something that sticks on the mind of really anyone on the trails in Northwest Arkansas for some time to come.
And before I let you go, Tony, I mean, again, you have done such a fantastic job, and for us as well. We thank you for your perspective, but I also understand that you've been taking some heat for your reporting on the attacks. So what's up with that?
Well, a little bit about that. And first, I want to say my reporting has never been to insult the investigators and everyone who is working this case very diligently. It's more so on the fundamentals of the bureaucracy that handles it. The issues were 6 hours with the people in the park not having any notice that there was a homicide. that was committed. And then 3 days of phone lines not working. People came to us expressing their leads, expressing what they saw, which ultimately led to the police sketch that we all saw and more detailed descriptions of the vehicle from our reporting that we handed directly over to authorities. So us calling them out on those issues of the 3 days with no phone line, that was simply to help. I'm sorry that it upsets some people, but clearly a glaring issue that hopefully in the future can be addressed. And we don't have to have that again, should there be another emergency where people need to get information to authorities. They come to them first and not a podcaster.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that people are glad that they know that this was going on before they went out on a hike. You did a public service. Yeah. And I know that many people are thankful for your reporting. Tony Bruce.
I think we need to admit something in our country. We have a predator problem. Ooh. We have a big predator problem that we don't like to admit exists. Because we have now essentially designed our systems to make them disappear out of the immediate presence of us once we identify them. And it doesn't always mean that they're going to disappear into law enforcement's hands and be swept up and taken away. More so, we have created a system here where out of sight, out of mind. And if they're out of sight and out of mind, or they're somebody else's problem, well, then hopefully thoughts and prayers that they don't do anything over there. But they do, and they keep doing until they get caught. We're talking about the Devil's Den case. Andrew McGinn, who slipped through the school district's unchecked cracks. Now, this year may be going, what are we talking about schools for? Well, because we're taking the origin story route today. How did this man end up at Devil's Den Park in Northwest Arkansas, stabbing a mother and father in front of their 7 and 9-year-old children to death? How did he get here? And how is he an elementary teacher? And how has he been an active elementary teacher for the last 4 or 5 years in elementary schools all over this part of the country? We're going to dig into how that happened, and we're going to hear about his not-so-perfect history, allegedly, through these schools, and how seeing something and saying something has done absolutely nothing. Because that's what we have. See something, say something. And you do. And then people don't want to get sued. And they don't want to have to deal with possible defamation. And there's more protections in place in our country for predators than survivors and victims. And yes, that's a big problem that we have. And it's usually in the vein and in the protection of rights and freedom and all those things that sound so lovely and wonderful. But if we're going to live in a free society, we're going to have to sacrifice some of those freedoms if we really want to get predators off our streets. We just are. Otherwise, they're going to keep happening. And they're everywhere. So how did this alleged predator, Andrew McGinn, slip through the school district's unchecked cracks in the wake of the shocking double homicide at Devil's Den State Park in Arkansas, where 28-year-old Andrew James McGinn began his murder spree? He was known as Drew McGinn before then. Heard that from many teachers who worked with him at other school districts. He was Drew. He was just Drew. He was a little different at times, but he was Drew. He stands accused of fatally stabbing a married couple in front of their young daughter. The deeper investigation revealing the troubling pattern in his short teaching career. Let's first go into where he came from and how this is broken and what allowed it to happen. McGinn, a recent education graduate with just 3 years of certified experience, he bounced between districts in Texas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas, despite internal complaints and inappropriate behavior towards young female students. No criminal charges were ever filed, and investigators concluded without sustaining misconduct allowed him to resign quickly and relocate, because there really was no investigation into any of these allegations. It was simply the district, okay, well, we'll get rid of him. Will that make you happy, Mr. and Mrs. Smith? Okay, great. Bye-bye. He's gone. You need to resign. We don't want to fire you, because that's going to look really bad if we fire you, because people are going to ask why we fired you, and we have cause, but we don't want to do this. It's easier if you just resign and go away. That's how this works. This case underscores a systematic failure in America's public education system, often dubbed passing the trash, where problematic educators are permitted to move on without consequence. Seems a little like the Catholic Church. Unfortunately, it's our public school system. Endangering children in new communities simply because districts prioritize avoiding scandal over accountability. McGann's entry into teaching was unremarkable on the surface. He graduated in May of 2022 with a Bachelor of Science in Elementary Education from the University of Central Oklahoma, though some reports conflictingly cite Oklahoma State University, with prior experience as a substitute teacher in Tulsa County, Oklahoma, and a student teaching stint in a fourth grade classroom at Broken Arrow Public Schools during spring of 2022. McGann quickly secured full-time positions. His self-introduction on Bryee Elementary's Facebook page in June of 2025 boasted his passion for helping students learn and grow. This is the school in Springdale here in Northwest Arkansas that he was supposed to be starting work at this next week, the first week in August. Luckily, he never did. But his career trajectory tells a story of instability and evasion. Let's go through that. Let's go back to 2022 and see where he began. Donald Elementary, Lewisville, in Texas, Flower Mound. McGann taught fourth grade there, math, at this suburban Dallas area school. Midway through the year, concerns emerged about his classroom management, professional judgment, and student favoritism. Parents reported alarming behavior. One mother told reporters her son witnessed McGann being, quote, very touchy with the girls and having them on his lap and making comments to them and keeping them back from recess, unquote.
Oh, God.
Markham described McGann as the most standoffish teacher she had ever met, adding he was pretty cold and disinterested in his students. Perfect hire. She filed a formal complaint with the superintendent in 2023. The district placed McGann on administrative leave in spring of 23 for an internal investigation. A letter to parents acknowledged complaints but found no evidence of inappropriate behavior with a student. Though his management and judgment fell below district expectations, rather than face termination or further scrutiny, McGann was allowed to quietly resign in May of 2023 without consequences. A statement given to Fox News said Mr. McGann was allowed to resign without consequence, and a statement was put out saying there was no evidence of inappropriate behavior. The clean exit meant no red flags for his record or for future employers, or most importantly, the folks at that district that would have to admit they hired a predator. We don't want that on the record, do we? No. And just think, if there was school-to-school reporting on this stuff, you might be able to stop him. Although this was his first full-time teaching job. So I do have a little grace there for not having anything to go on initially. But I do not give them grace on the back end of this, where it was, we don't want those words around us. Just think of that for a second.
Don't want to.
This 20-some-year-old man, fourth-grade teacher, and he's having little girls sit on his lap? I'm sorry, that's reserved for like your immediate family, like mom and dad, and I guess Santa. And that's about it.
I was thinking about Santa. Yeah. It's funny that you said that.
And even like, that okay, can be a little questionable these days too. But
yeah,
I wouldn't imagine doing that. I mean, number one, just the perception is fucked up. I mean, if it's just, it's not something we do at this day and age. Even if you're the purest mind and you're just thinking of like how your grandpa used to lift you up and you just, nothing bad, not bad. But I couldn't imagine today anyone thinking that that is really an appropriate thing to do with someone that's not your kid or not like an immediate family member. It's not like your niece, nephew or something. Just the teacher at school, some random guy, basically, and not having the forethought either to go, that's not appropriate. I just shouldn't do that. Even though there's nothing here, I just don't want that optic going on. It's beyond that. This guy didn't care. He didn't care about the optics. He cared about himself. He cared about what he wanted. So after resigning in 23 and 24, went to Spring Creek Elementary, Broken Arrow Public Schools in Oklahoma. Fresh from Texas, McGann landed a fifth grade teaching role after passing all required background checks, because there ain't no checks that look back into your former complaints at the previous school. No public complaints surfaced during this tenure, and the district reported he left of his own accord to work out of state. However, he instead stayed in the Tulsa area, moving to a nearby district, highlighting how incomplete references and can obscure past issues. Now, that's on the surface. There wasn't any public complaints. Internally, if you take a look at a lot of teachers and a lot of former parents that had this man, that'll tell you a little bit different. And it's not just a bunch of people making stuff up online. That stuff does exist. This ain't that.
No.
People are coming out going, yeah, hey, we said something and nothing happened. Then we go to 24. Sand Springs Public Schools in Oklahoma. McGann taught fifth grade here. Again, clearing background checks from the Oklahoma State Department of Education. No allegations were reported publicly, but he resigned in May of 25 to move out of state. According to district statements, parents of his former students later described his demeanor as eerie and unsettling in hindsight. You know, just the type of guy you want to hire as an elementary school teacher. And then he lands in Springdale Public Schools in Northwest Arkansas, where he's set to or was set to begin teaching next week. He was hired as a third grade teacher under the name Drew McGann. He introduced himself enthusiastically on the school's social media as, I recently moved to NWA from Oklahoma and am excited to continue my career in education. Never interacted with students, as his arrest on July 30th, 2025, preempted the school year. Superintendent Jared Cleveland emphasized, this individual has not had any time to come in contact with Springdale students or the families we serve. Good. Who hired him? I think we got to look at people's pickers a little bit better.
You know, though, think about it for a second. People can really put forth quite a facade for quite some time. You know, that you think they're one person and they're really another behind the scenes.
And that's why we can't rely on pickers. We have to rely on facts and information and data that comes in from students and parents, the people these teachers serve. And if there's flags coming up in different places, those flags should continue to follow that person if they're going to continue to work in that same field over and over. It wasn't just like one red flag where one rogue parent didn't like that he gave extra homework one night and, you know, hurt little, you know, Brittany's feelings. No, this is not that. This is repeated predatory type behavior allegations that have gone on for many years and continue to just sweep under the rug. He'll move. Somebody else's problem. Red flags began early. Centered on McGann's interactions with young girls. At Donald Elementary, multiple students reportedly observed him favoring female pupils inappropriately, prompting the parental outcry. Quote, my son and several students witnessed Mr. McGann being inappropriate with little girls in the class and reported it to the principal at the time. It's also shared on Facebook. Despite the investigation, the lack of evidence allowed McGann to depart unscathed with no formal notification that could alert future districts. As one parent noted online, finding out he went on to kill a couple in front of their two little girls is horrifying. And the fact that there were warning signs and he was continually allowed around children is a travesty.
Why isn't there a database? But again, if he hasn't been convicted of anything, how do we put people in a database that there's been complaints, but he hasn't been convicted? He hasn't been, he resigned. He wasn't fired for his behavior. So it's the again, way, he's falling through the cracks.
It's the way we used to hire people. You used to give recommendations. You used to give bad recommendations as well. I wouldn't call that a recommendation. You would give a bad referral if someone, you get that call. But so often today, it's simply, verify employment. Were they there? Yeah. Check that box, yes or no.
Yep, that's all you can do.
And so they have background checks, which focus on criminal records, miss the unsubstantiated allegations as no charges were ever filed. McGann's story is emblematic of a nationwide problem of passing the trash where school districts allow troubled teachers to resign rather than pursue messy firings or legal battles, effectively pawning the issue to the next employer. A 2018 USA Today investigation revealed hundreds of cases where educators accused of sexual misconduct simply moved districts without repercussions, often due to confidential settlements or incomplete disclosures. In McGann's case, Louisville's ISD's decision to let him resign after finding poor professional judgment, but no outright misconduct, enabled his seamless transition. Critics argue this prioritizes institutional reputation over child safety. It's not a suggestion, it does. With weak interstate reporting mechanics exacerbating the issue. And that's the big problem that we have. Experts like Terry Miller, president of Stop Educator Sexual Abuse and Misconduct and Exploitation, Sesame, by the way, have long advocated for mandatory national databases tracking educator misconduct, even unsubstantiated complaints, to prevent such shuffling. Without reform, predators like McGann, whose alleged random attack left two children orphaned, can exploit the gaps. Calls for accountability are out there. As McGann awaits trial on these two counts of capital murder, his case has ignited a lot of outrage among parents and educators. It's interesting. He's literally pulled the Band-Aid off of another problem that we have in our country with this problem by committing a completely different crime that has nothing to do with this. Or does it? This was a predator. He demonstrated his predatory skills in just another way. And his system never, ever stopped him. So why is this happening? Well, districts often withhold negative information, and I'm not saying this is right, but I'm telling you how it works right now. Districts often withhold negative information to avoid potential defamation lawsuits because they're very easy to file. If a district shares unsubstantiated allegations like complaints that were investigated but not proven, the teacher could sue for slander or libel, claiming damage to their reputation. It's especially risky with at-will or tenured employees, where sharing could be seen as interfering with future employment. Tenure laws in many states protect teachers from dismissal without good cause, and they need to all go away, making it legally challenging to document or share issues without solid evidence. Then you have the personnel record privacy. Teacher personnel files are generally considered confidential under state laws, similar to how FERPA protects student records. Through FERPA itself, it allows students, FERPA itself applies to students, not actual teachers. That's why we saw Katherine Ramsland recently in an interview talking about Brian Koberger, said that she still has to abide by FERPA law, even though he has been convicted of murdering those people. She still has to follow that law because his records are under seal under it, and she would be violating that if she were to talk about it. Sharing details from the internal investigation could violate privacy statutes, leading to laws against the district or lawsuits against the district. For instance, some courts have ruled that records of public employee misconduct aren't automatically public if they involve unproven claims. No federal mandate for sharing. There's no national law requiring districts to share unsubstantiated misconduct info across state lines. While the National Association of State Directors of Teacher Education and Certification maintains a clearinghouse for credential revocations and serious offenses, it doesn't cover minor or unproven complaints, leaving gaps for educators to move freely. So essentially, we have a system that only reacts once the crime has been committed. Until then, all the complaints in the world can come at you, but until we can actually prove it, no one's going to know. And here's the thing with predators. They're predators because they know how to get past things. They know how to not get caught. That's kind of what a predator is. We've created a breeding ground for them. because the laws protect them, not the kids. There's also internal policies and NDAs that come into play here. You think of that when you think of Diddy, almost. NDAs. Yep. Many districts also use NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, or settlement terms that prohibit sharing details of investigations or resignations. This is often to resolve issues quietly and avoid public scandal, costly litigation, or union disputes. Policies prioritize neutral references. Like we were talking earlier, only confirming dates of employment to minimize risk, even if it means omitting warnings. Union agreements and tenure protections are also out there. Teachers' unions negotiate contracts that limit what can be shared, emphasizing due process. So you got some teachers' unions that need a little shaping up here, because that's a big effing problem in this whole thing. Districts may allow a teacher to resign in good standing rather than pursue formal discipline, as firing processes are lengthy and expensive, and they don't have budgets. The quiet exit policy is common to avoid grievances and arbitrations. There's often no standardized system for interstate or inter-district sharing of non-criminal info. States handle educator misconduct reporting differently. Some require districts to report to state boards only for credential-related issues, but not for internal complaints. For non-certified staff, like aides, sharing is even rarer due to minimal oversight. So the burden on the educator in some areas, in some states, the onus is on the teacher to self-disclose past issues during hiring. And I'm sure all predatory teachers are doing that. And by the way, when I was over here, they accused me of putting children on my lap, and I got an erection, and they thought that was odd. I don't find that odd. Do you? they're not going to do that.
No.
Rather than on the previous district to report them, it shifts responsibility and reduces district involvement. Districts prioritize avoiding legal entanglements over proactive sharing because investigations that find no evidence of misconduct, even if judgment issues exist and many witnesses exist, they don't trigger mandatory reporting. This creates a loophole where educators with patterns of concerning behavior can bounce between jobs. And by the way, mandatory reporter, all teachers are. But here's the thing. When you mandatorily report something, it goes to the Department of Children's Services and Welfare. And each state's a little bit different. And each state, I can guarantee, is underfunded and running, you know, a shoestring operation that is not efficient in any way, shape, or form. And you've just added another dot or another marble to their giant wall of marbles that they're trying to get through with their limited funding and staffing. So good luck having them take a look at that issue that you just filed that complaint on as a mandatory reporter. We have the system in place to report. We have the people who are reporting. We have a system that is not doing its job. Reforms have been proposed, like expanding national databases to include unsubstantiated complaints or requiring full disclosure references, but implementation varies by state. For example, some states have passed the trash laws, banning confidential settlements and misconduct cases, but enforcement is inconsistent. Ethically, it raises questions about child safety, as incomplete info sharing endangers students in new districts. Advocacy groups push for change, arguing that the current system values institutional protection over prevention, which it outright does. In summary, it's not outright illegal to share factual, substantiated info if it leads to a credential revocation. But the fear of legal repercussions from privacy violations or defamation makes districts err on the side of caution, because they don't want to get sued. Policies reinforce this by favoring silence to dodge lawsuits and administrative burdens. If you're focusing on a specific state like Texas, Oklahoma, or Arkansas from the McGann case, laws can vary. Texas has stricter reporting for certified teachers, but gaps for unproven claims. It's a system that clearly has been piecemealed together over the years and now is just one unworking blob of shit that doesn't know its hand from its foot, and allows these people to slip in and out of the cracks unnoticed until they strike. And he struck in a park and killed parents. So was his motive ultimately to get the girls? I don't know. I don't know what the motive was here. I don't know if there was a motive here. I don't know if this is a man who had a psychotic break and went out on this mission to kill. It doesn't make a lot of logical sense. And I know most things don't make a lot of logical sense with people who do things like this. But predators, they're not usually that stupid. If you're going to try and abduct children, you're not going to knife their parents in the middle of a busy park and then carry them out of the park in your arms like duffel bags. I don't know what the end game was here. It doesn't make any sense, really. And the children got away, thank God. Or would they have been the other victims of an SA or of murder as well? We don't know the answer to that, and there's many, many questions. This certainly was not the type of person, I guess one could say, one would expect to have been the perpetrator in this, a fourth grade elementary school teacher. It's hard to understand where they come from and why they're able to do this. We can dig deeper into his past, into what may have made him the monster that he is, and I'm sure we will in the coming weeks and days. But for now, let's shed some light on some things that we can actually control. We can't control the mind of a madman, but we can control how we deal with them and how we find them, rather than after they kill or SA our kids. How about we start finding them sooner? Because a lot of people are saying things. Just nobody's doing anything that has the power to do it. What are your thoughts?
I'm stunned. How does somebody like this? I mean, there's so many things that I want to know. I'd love to know a motive. What snapped? What happened? What happened that you woke up and went, I'm going to kill somebody today?
I'd love to know what's going on in his personal life.
Yeah. And what happened?
And honestly, we looked at his Facebook page and we found his mother's Facebook page. And there's a lot of images of it's pictures, so take it for what it's worth. But it's childhood pictures like any other healthy looking family. These pictures do not look like, you know, he's being brought up, you know, in a trailer park by meth addicts at all. It looks like it was I'm just basing on what the images I have seen. So if I'm totally off, I apologize. If there's something more behind these pictures, we are just beginning to learn about this man. But from what we've seen on the surface, it doesn't fit a mold. There's tons of pictures with him, with friends, smiling out. He looks like any other normal, teenage boy in a lot of these pictures, because the pictures are from younger time that his mother had posted. Active in, looks like, some sports. I think soccer is what we saw up there. But nothing, and not that you look back at it, profile pictures from someone in high school, although for him, keep in mind, that was just a few short years ago. There's nothing in there.
There's nothing that stands out.
Nothing.
Like he wasn't posting, you know, anti-government things.
No, it's not even the weirdness of like Koberger. Like he looks like a normal kid. Koberger always had those sunken, creepy eyes going on. And this guy does have the sunken, creepy eyes now. When you look at the eyes in the mugshot of this monster, they're dead. It's just like Koberger. There's nothing behind it. I mean, was this a kid who through his whole life felt a similar way, felt dead inside, felt empty, just kept going through the motions and trying to fit in with the rest of society, but never really found a way to do it because his brain was that broken? And then one day just snapped. I don't know.
I feel like there's probably a lot of those people out here that don't feel like they have a purpose, but yet they keep waking up. Does that make sense? I mean, it sounds like a horrible thing to say, but they can't find purpose. They can't find agency. and they go to bed at night and they wake up in the morning and they have to do the grind all over again. And they don't know how they're going to get through it. So they need to create something that sparks them.
And he didn't end his life either, which is an interesting part of this. It wasn't like, I'm going to do this and then end it. He still wanted to keep going.
He was getting a haircut.
Yeah.
I mean, was that to hide his appearance or was that...
Might have been just for school.
My hair's getting a little long.
Honest to God, he had very long hair and school was starting. It might have just been to blend in at school. I don't think it was to hide. I think he thought he was going to start work and start school the next week and no one was going to find him. Surprise, surprise. There's a lot of these people out there.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you do? How do you stop?
I think as there's more chaos in the world, Tony, I think people are getting, they're inching closer to that, oh my God, I'm ready to snap moment.
Yeah.
And I think it comes down to who you are at the core. I mean, shit, the last 4 weeks for me, I felt like I'm going to snap. But at no point did I ever think, I'm going to go kill somebody. No, it's just been, I don't know how to manage what's happening in my world. Mm-hmm. I've never thought about destroying somebody else's life.
Yeah.
To me, it's like, I don't know what I'm going to eat for dinner. I don't know if I'm going to eat. I don't, you know, it's more of an internal thing. Mm-hmm. These people, there's something about, I need to take out what's happening to me on somebody else. And I need to destroy other people.
And I have a feeling there was something symbolic about that couple. About the mom, the dad, and the two little girls, that's the one he chose. I don't know what that symbolism is. I don't know if it's because there was two little girls there and he wanted to get to them, or if it was something about the family unit itself that triggered him. There's a lot of questions, and we're going to keep digging and find out more answers. Not at the end of the day that it's going to answer anything. We're like, oh, well, that totally makes sense. That explains why he did it. But I think it's more so to understand more of these formulas. And we know them on the surface. Children that come from this type of household or that type of household are more likely to commit X type of crime. We know that those things exist. We do absolutely nothing with those stats rather than just scare ourselves. How about we start looking at ways of helping these kids? How about we look at ways of educating these kids in a way that matters? In a way that actually gets through to them, because our system is so broken and so disgusting and so effed up. We don't know what the hell we're doing. And we're raising armies of monsters. Not that they're all going to go out and kill people, but you have these kids that are so disconnected from the world, society, and how to interact with it, that we're seeing this. We're seeing these little zombies come up that have no idea what their place in the world is and what do they want to do rather than try and find their place in the world and put some effort into it. They want to destroy it because that's what they feel and that's what they've been programmed to believe. Just destroy it. That'll help you on a real visceral level. They're out there. This man could have been stopped. He could have been probably put away a long time ago for inappropriate actions with children, or at least not allowed to continue to teach, which would then prevent him from ever getting to this state and bouncing to this state from the other two to teach here. And then maybe this wouldn't have happened.
No, not in Arkansas. He may have done it back where he came from.
It could have been anywhere. You're exactly right. Or what if that breaking the pattern, breaking him earlier on, would that have put him on a different path? I don't know. It just probably depends on the predator. Some are going to do it. They're determined no matter what. Some are very confused and making horrible choices. And maybe there's drugs involved. Maybe there's some sort of mental issue going on that if medicated or treated could prevent. We don't know the answer to that in this case, but we have a system that brought him here for employment under very, very flawed pretenses. So that's it. That's how he got here. That's what we know so far about Andrew McCann. We'll keep you updated. Be sure to let us know what your thoughts are in the comments section on YouTube, and press subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts or watching us on YouTube so you don't miss any of our content. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Now for our social story. We post the topics and you decide what you want to do a deep dive on. Now the choice is a couple murdered in Arkansas in front of their two young daughters, the presidential fitness test returning, and Lyme disease threat with doctors reporting a sharp rise in ER visits related to tick bites. And 42% of you decided you want to know more about the husband and wife murdered in Arkansas. Now, the suspect in the killings of a couple on a remote Arkansas hiking trail is now formally charged with two counts of capital murder. Podcast host of Hidden Killers, Tony Bruschi, joins me now for the latest in this case. Tony, what have you been following in this case?
There's a lot that we've been following in this case. Now that the man has been arrested, Andrew McGann, he is now been charged. And we are hearing that he has allegedly made an admission to the crime itself to authorities. He has not yet pled out in court, coming up on the 25th. And they are possibly expecting a not guilty plea despite that admission that took place earlier this week. There was a DNA match that also helped authorities match it up to Andrew McGann. He was arrested in a barber shop in a salon just the other day when he was getting his hair cut. Police came in, made the arrest. We actually talked last night to the stylist who was that very salon cutting his hair, and the shock of what took place, realizing that the person whose hair she was cutting was in fact the man accused of murdering Clinton and Kristen Brink on that hiking trail in Devil's Den.
And what more can you tell us about the suspect, Andrew McGann, and what are we learning about how he ended up teaching in Arkansas?
Well, that's the interesting thing, and that's the journey that we've been going on. And here's the disturbing reality of how Andrew McGann ended up teaching in Arkansas. Despite multiple allegations of predatory and inappropriate behavior towards students at districts in Texas, and now we're hearing allegations coming out of Oklahoma from some parents, unverified, but they are allegations. McGann was never formally charged or even reported to authorities. Instead, he was quietly allowed to resign each time, leaving behind internal complaints locked away in confidential personnel files. Why? Well, because districts quite often fear lawsuits, bad PR, and lengthy investigations, and there are laws at times preventing this information from traveling from district to district. It often leads them to handle these issues privately and internally rather than involving law enforcement or child protective services. On top of that, there's no national database or requirement for schools to share disciplinary records when a teacher moves from state to state. Personal privacy laws and non-disclosure agreements further shield these allegations from view. It's a glaring gap in the mandatory reporting and internal district communication that allowed McGann to bounce freely from one unsuspecting community to another until he allegedly committed these horrific murders at Devil's Den State Park in Northwest.
And finally, Tony, what are you hearing about how the community is reacting to this killing of this married couple? I mean, this is a place where so many people in that area in the Ozarks go to hike and enjoy themselves.
Yeah, hiking is a huge thing in this neck of the woods. You have one of the largest hiking systems and bike trails in the country. It is what people do. And they certainly cut back this last week after this horrible news came out. There certainly is a sense of trepidation. There is a sense of relief that he has been found. But the unsettling part of this is this was appears to be rather a random attack, not necessarily a domestic incident or something of that nature. So there is somewhat amount of fear that still exists out there, the fear of a possible copycat or others, and safety in general on trails out there with little to no cell service. What happens if something like that you get?
And I'm interested, you get a lot of listeners to your podcast. What are they most interested in when it comes to this case?
The biggest thing is, how was this guy here? How was he able to be a teacher? He was actually going to be employed by the Springdale School District. He's one of the districts here in Northwest Arkansas, and he was set to begin teaching this very next week. Obviously, he's been arrested. That will not be happening. But the question ultimately goes back to that school system and the failures in reporting possible predatory behavior from district to district.
All right, Tony Bruschi, thank you for that analysis.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.